and welcome to another episode of the Peace Production, a podcast from the Organization for World Peace, where we examine issues currently threatening human security. Today's podcast is about food insecurity during the times of COVID-19. We're going to analyze the rise of food insecurity in some of the countries that have been hit the hardest during the pandemic. These countries are Spain, Italy, France, the United States, Brazil, and the UK. Joining me is our in-house correspondent, Monica Sager. Hi, Monica.
Hi there. How are you?
Pretty good. How about yourself?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Could you please start by defining food insecurity and describing some of its root causes?
Of course. So most of the time when people think of food insecurity, they think of just the access to food. But how food insecurity is defined, it's being in a state without reliable access to sufficient quantities of affordable food, but it's also nutritious food. So it's people that don't have access to that as well. And this obviously then causes problems with like undernutrition, with these insufficient intake and improper balance of protein, energy, micronutrients, and that can lead to stuff like malnutrition, deficiencies in specific vitamins like vitamin A or iodine or iron, and even anemia. So overall, it's a cyclical issue, and it really relates to a whole bunch of different societal issues like poverty, homelessness, mental health. All of these different issues not only can lead to food insecurity, but food insecurity can lead to it. And it results in this really severe social, psychological, and behavioral consequence that leads to stress, anxiety, depression, and all these different things and factors that people are trying to manage and incorporate all within their own life. So it becomes this very difficult issue. It can be definitely chronic. It can be seasonal, or it can be even just temporary. So people don't have to be food insecure for a long period of time for them to be classified as such. Even so, it can happen to really anybody. It can happen to your neighbor. It can happen to your friend. It's occurring in households, regions, on a national level even. And we're seeing this because of food availability does not ensure food accessibility. So it becomes this like governmental policy issue, as well as the proper utilization of food in general. And even though food is this human right, it becomes this problem of who can afford food and who has access to food. So overall, you're seeing this significant issue that's this international problem, especially in developing regions. So millions of people are suffering from hunger and undernutrition. The United Nations have estimated that there's about 840 million undernourished people in the world. So that number has actually increased by almost 100 million between 1993 and 2003.
Right, Monica. When one thinks about food insecurity, normally what comes to mind are some regions in the world like sub-Saharan Africa or some parts of Southeast Asia, some regions in Latin America, right? But I think what many people don't know is that food insecurity is actually pretty pervasive, and that it actually also happens in many of the Western countries that you know are considered to be providing food to, you know, the full citizenry, like for example the United States or some European countries. Correct?
Exactly. In the United States alone, it's this really difficult problem for college students as well as the common person. But for college students specifically, it's 39% of them are food insecure. And then overall in that country, in the U.S., it's 37 million people facing food insecurity. It's an issue not only in the developing countries.
Right, and it's probably due to all kinds of causes, including wealth inequality, like what we see in the United States, right? I imagine that during the times of the pandemic, this situation has unfortunately gotten much worse. Is that correct?
100%. COVID-19 is predicted to possibly double the number of people suffering from food insecurity, pushing it to around 265 million, as the UN World Food Program estimated. And it's because this pre-existing crisis that we already had will just be worsened because of the countries facing lockdowns and all these economic consequences that come with it that are making the people who were susceptible even more susceptible now.
Yeah, it's an unfortunate situation indeed. And I imagine that the complete freeze of the economy around the globe is going to lead to many unprecedented consequences for people around the world. But as we said from the beginning, today we're going to be analyzing how food insecurity has actually increased in some of the countries that have been the hardest by the pandemic. And starting to analyze these countries, we're going to take a look at Spain, which is a country that has over 27,000 people who have died since the beginning of the pandemic, and 268,000 people have been infected. It has been one of the worst hit countries in Western Europe. And could you please tell me a little bit about what the situation in terms of food insecurity was in Spain before the pandemic?
So the most recent tallying, so in 2019, there was a total of 1 million and about 50,000 people who had to be delivered over 21 million kilograms of food all over the country. So it's the highest level of unemployment that the country has been facing, with people working in the economy and low average pensions not really helping those who are retiring.
So what you're pointing out too is that some of the structural problems that have led or that led people to ask for food before the pandemic were indeed the high levels of unemployment that the country has, especially since the 2008 recession, right? Also, the amount of people who work in the gray economy, meaning that they're not available or, you know, to actually get government social programs or net protection programs. Is that correct?
Yeah. So Spain had actually just spent 16.6% of its GDP on this social protection. And it's obviously this problem that's affecting a lot of people, as there were over 26% of people in Spain and 29% of children who are at risk for poverty. So as I was saying before, this is the cyclical action that poverty leads to all these other human rights problems like food insecurity. So Spain definitely was already facing food insecurity that's just going to be perpetrated even more.
Right. So how has the situation changed since the beginning of the pandemic?
So since then, calls have been definitely going into food banks. They've multiplied by 5 times during the coronavirus, according to the Spanish Federation for the Food Banks. And it's really in high demand for all this food, especially in like Madrid and Barcelona, because it's this problem that's extending throughout the rest of the country, like I was talking about. The problem is, though, that many people live in that informal economy, like you said, where they can't access this aid that the government had implemented. So it becomes that more problem of who's getting the food and where can they get it. Due to that, lots of lines are obviously being formed at food banks and people are just trying.
Right. Although I've read about Spain and the Spanish government's response to the crisis, right? And they're trying to, according to what I've read, implement a lot of money into some of the social network programs, such as, for example, implementing a vital income or minimal income salary for some of the worst hit families. Is that correct?
Yes. The fundamental differences from 2008 crisis, like you were talking about, where now there's this period before 2008 where there were people who were wealthy and some people were able to have the savings. But then after that, you had the people living check to check. Now you have it seeming more people are trying to scavenge for food and are trying to see where they can get that help. You have this economic stagnation in 2008 that was gradual, but this one has been a sudden collapse. Like everything shut down all of a sudden. It happened worldwide where everything was just being locked down. So everybody was affected immediately in this pandemic. And then the third difference then is that the crisis is also not due to economic reasons. This is obviously because of a virus. So while the economy was affected, it wasn't the main reason why this is all happening. It does mean, though, that recovery might not be immediate and that it might look more like in the shape of a V instead of a straight line. So there definitely is going to be that big difference than what we saw in 2008.
Right. I think that in order for Spain and some of the worst hit countries in the European Union to actually be able to get out of the crisis as fast as possible, there will need to be a fast response by the European Union and maybe they will have to draft some common programs to be able to save and rescue some of these countries, right? Another country that has been very badly hit since the beginning of the pandemic, and in fact was the first country in Europe that saw the numbers spread very fast, has been Italy, right? With more than actually 32,000 dead people and 227,000 infected, what was the situation in Italy before the pandemic in terms of food insecurity?
Similarly to Spain, how we were talking about the percentage of people living in poverty, in Italy, the percentage of people living in poverty there was also at a record high. This was in 2019. And this is because of that prolonged economic stagnation that we were seeing for a few years. And it led to a lot of high unemployment rates that continue to really face this country and were causing more food insecurity, more poverty, homelessness, anything that you can think of these social issues that all, again, are cyclical. So up until a month before COVID-19, Banco Alimentare satisfied the needs of 1.5 million people in poverty. So it definitely was this big crisis there already. And the number has just since increased due to the pandemic, with more people than ever needing that aid.
Right. And what is the current situation?
As of April 22nd, food banks had already distributing an increase up to 40% throughout the whole nation. And these numbers were even higher in southern regions, so like Campania, Calabria, and Sicily. All really high numbers. And you see the percentage of families living in poverty rising, because not only, like I said before, that the numbers were already high, but now you have unemployment continuing. You have more rates of unemployment. You have more rates of economic stagnation that's taking a toll on this country.
You mentioned Banco Alimentare, right, which is the national food bank in Italy. What kind of work do they do, or have they been doing before and during the crisis in order to solve this or try to kind of help?
For the past 30 years, actually, they've been distributing food among those who need it in Italy. They have a whole bunch of different offices throughout the 21 territories, actually, and they work really closely with, I believe the number is 7,500 different NGOs and associations. So they have this whole crisis protection, almost you can say, trying to solve food insecurity and trying to help those in need. They started a crisis phone line that now, because of COVID-19, has received a lot more calls. Calls have been increasing because of people who don't know where to get food or don't know how to get food or just need help to just feed their own families, really. So overall, they are really having this structured plan that's trying to help these people.
I've read that they work with the communal municipalities as well, right? They're in,
yes,
their development of the social and food aid program.
Absolutely, they do. They're trying to work really hands-on. And now to help that as well, the president of Banco Alimentare, Giovanni Bruno, said that they need this long-term structure. And that they're going to help these people and help the growing numbers to help that social unrest that we've been talking about, because there's this new type of person who is in dire need. It's not just all those ones who were before, the 1.5 million we're talking about. It's a lot more people now.
Yeah, it's what you're saying. I mean, I think that the consequences of this crisis are going to be felt throughout the next years, not just in terms of food insecurity, but also in all kinds of the psychological toll that it has taken over some of these people who have been either affected directly by, family members that have either deceased or have been infected, or probably also by the psychological effects of not being able to cope economically with such a situation.
Absolutely. And that's why this really needs to be a joint collaboration between cities, towns, governments, all to try to increase that support for these people.
Right. The next country that we're going to take a look at is France. It's up there also with Italy and Spain in terms of the numbers. And 28,000 deaths since the beginning of the crisis and more than 180,000 people infected. Could you please tell me a little bit about what the situation was before the pandemic?
Looking again at the most recent statistics, in 2019, you had 14% of the French population, which is about 8.8 million people, that were considered poor. So this actually represents an increase in people by about 1 million in the past 10 years. So according to that, there's 21% of the population, again, which is about 14 million people, who are suffering from food insecurity. And based off of these numbers, that means that they haven't had 3 balanced meals in a day. So in terms of looking at it geographically, you can see that poverty is the first and foremost present in the urban zones. So it's not just in the rural areas that you might think of because they don't have the supermarkets to go to, but it's actually in the cities. And then this was actually not the case 10 years ago. So it's becoming more prominent there. More precisely though, poverty is concentrated in cities that have more than 20,000 citizens. So in 2016, poverty rates were at 17.3% compared to 12.4% in the little communes, which had less than the 20,000 citizens. And that's also compared to 9.9% in rural communities. Looking at the big picture, it's 65% of poor people in these big urban zones that are just poor and they need the help and they are living in these big industrial regions, but they don't have access to the stuff they need.
Yes, and if I'm not mistaken, many of these urban zones that, you know, are in poverty normally are occupied by immigrant population who, you know, moved to France 2 or 3 generations ago and have been working hard to try to live in the country.
They're coming from the north, they're coming from the Mediterranean, and they're all trying to find that extra help, but they're still facing poverty.
So what's the current situation now after the pandemic?
Just like the other countries we've talked about so far, the numbers of people relying on food handouts have continued to soar. And it's hard because in France, they have that lockdown. And these numbers are putting them back into the deepest recession that they've had since World War II. So many of these people are looking for handouts of sugar, of pasta, of cheese, all the normal things like fruits and vegetables that you can try to find at supermarkets, but they don't have access to it. So people are looking to donate. They're looking for volunteers. Look at around 1,600 families a day are being able to be fed by certain organizations like welfare states. And that's actually twice the number that was expected that would need this. It's a lot more people than France could have ever thought of that would need the food insecurity help.
Right. And normally we've seen over the last years, you know, over the last decade, a bunch of social protests in some of these neighborhoods, for example, out in the outskirts of Paris and some of the big cities in France. Have we seen any of that social unrest since the beginning of the pandemic?
Oh, we definitely have. Violence has hit several neighborhoods for 5 nights straight over the past few weeks. And you see this almost because of the cramped social housing, because of workers on the front line with jobs that are trying their hardest and doing the most work. You have the restless younger generation who are just trying to do something and find something to do, but they're turning up into these hot spots of infection and unrest. So it's definitely still being violent, and there's definitely still that issue of trying to control that while trying to control the pandemic.
Right, and trying to integrate them into the social fabric and being able to provide. Yes, what I've read actually about it is that people who live in these neighborhoods are either many times the frontline workers, the essential workers, work in supermarkets and some of those jobs that haven't been stopped during the lockdown, but also many of them working in the gray economy and therefore not being able to be eligible for the social programs that the French government passes, correct?
Right. So these people have been working at supermarkets. They've been working as security personnel, truck drivers, cleaners. And some of those are still obviously working, like supermarket cashiers or security personnel. But others might have lost their jobs due to the pandemic, like the cleaners. And that's creating this other informal economic downfall, or this persuasion that they don't know what to do, that was previously able to enable them to feed their families, where they're now facing food insecurity because they don't have that help or that access to money or anything like that. So this lockdown is definitely compounding the economic issues for these specific areas as well, so that they can't fulfill their needs.
The next country we're going to take a look at is the United States, with over 1.5 million people infected by the disease and 93,000 deaths. It is definitely the country in the world that has the highest gross numbers in terms of the pandemic's results, right? So could you tell me a little bit about food insecurity in the United States before the pandemic? I know it was already a big issue, and then we'll take a look at what is going on at the moment.
It definitely was a big issue. And most of the time, at least what I grew up from being in the United States, we've always been taught that it's a land of privilege or of opportunity. So you don't really think of food insecurity, especially in the United States. You think of people being able to afford this type of stuff. But as I said before, you have the 39% of college students who are food insecure, which is 37 million people in the whole country food insecure. And there's different programs like food stamps that the government has regulated. They're trying to help people, but not everyone even had access to that before because there's certain restrictions based off of how much you're being paid, how many hours you work, and stuff like that. And if you're an hour too high or an hour too short, then you might not get the access to the food stamps to help you get food.
Right. So, would you say that the economic system in the United States, the model of capitalism that is implemented over there, has led to some of these structural problems over the last years?
I would say it's definitely helped perpetrate it because more people could have access to food stamps if this was regulated in a different way. But because of how it's set up now, it's helping not everyone who needs the help. The government does a part in not spreading the access to food or to housing.
Regulation that is needed in order to implement some kind of equality, right?
Right.
And also, I think that the factor that there's no universal health care in the United States might have contributed to make things worse during the pandemic.
Because certain people have access to health care and certain people don't, based off of insurance, based off of pay, based off of even race and gender and other background. So with the pandemic, it's become harder for people to get access, even if they can't afford it then, because people are living paycheck to paycheck. So they have to juggle both food, healthcare, housing, and other bills that they need to take care of. So they were definitely already under pressure. But now there's even more pressure because you don't have that extra paycheck coming in, possibly.
And also huge amounts of debt that the families engage in, right, due to the normal development of the American economy. We've all seen images of lines of cars for kilometers and kilometers in order to get some food relief. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So food banks have definitely been doing a bigger part during this pandemic. They have been doing so many more protocols than just having people come to the food bank like normally. A lot of food banks have actually been doing delivery services now as well. So in addition to all those long lines that you were referring to, you have other cars that are going to actual houses. So you see that this is an even bigger issue than what you're seeing in pictures. So these cars that are delivering the food from food banks are helping those who are disabled, those who are elderly, those who have underlying health issues that they can't go out during the pandemic or else they would be more at risk. At food banks, they also are not getting all the food that they need because farmers are not finding enough work to get all their food picked and ready to go to markets. So in the U.S., we have a meat shortage right now, actually. There's so many other people who also need the food that it's more than ever that people are looking at all these different places because at one place you might have the food, but at another they might not. So you're going to have to go to multiple different locations as well.
Yes, and I think that the institutional framework that the United States has with its federal government and different states has led to a certain inequality in terms of its response to the crisis. Whether, you know, some countries have actually had complete lockdowns and the way that's affected the economy, and other states might not have reacted in the same way and have opened and then suffered the consequences. And they also all implement different social network strategies, don't they?
Yes, so there's different regulations depending upon which state that people are living in. For example, New York was one of the first to do a full lockdown in that city. But even further out into the state, you might have different regulations. And then even more so, if we're looking at other states, there's some that haven't really put in too many lockdown protocols with stay-at-home actions. And there are some that have put in major ones. So it definitely is dependent upon where you live in the United States.
Government has been doing this Corona Aid Relief Economic Security, or CARES Act, where they are having these different stimulus bills that are helping small businesses, as well as families. Hospitals are getting money, even some schools. So you see this different disparity of who's getting help and who actually needs the help. And even more so with this $2 trillion stimulus bill, people are still, who need the help, are still waiting to get their checks. So it's almost like a waiting game still, even if you are promised that food insecurity help or that hospital help or anything else.
It must be excruciating. Every day that passes and you're not getting the aid that you need must be very hard. It must be taking a huge toll on the American population. Right. Another country that has raised international attention because of its response to the crisis and actually is right now in the middle of the kind of its peak of the pandemic is Brazil, where its president, Jair Bolsonaro, mocked the disease in the beginning and was pretty late to react. So the numbers right now is in Brazil are that they have over 18,000 people who have died and 248,000 who have been infected. Could you please tell us a little bit about what the situation was in Brazil before the pandemic and how it has changed over the course of the last couple of months?
Prior to coronavirus, poverty was still widespread in Brazil. It was about income inequality that really caused a significant problem. And about 35% of the Brazilian population, they all lived with less than $2 a day. So if you can imagine that, it's not really even a meal. And in rural areas, it's even more of an increase of people. So instead of the 35%, it's 51% in rural areas. And this particularly has become a problem in the last three decades, as Brazil has changed from being a net importer of food to a net exporter due to the increased production and productivity. So thinking of that, it leads to how Brazil is exporting the food, but they're not giving the food to their own people. So you have that food insecurity issue already that's just going to be blown out of proportions even more so due to the pandemic.
What are the numbers since the pandemic started?
Brazilian government has been lagging behind a little bit based off of the articles that I've been reading. So they don't really have too many numbers that I saw of who is food insecure now. But a lot of volunteers have been acting on their own behalf. So they've been trying to organize and protect themselves. So with little community areas, like in Sao Paulo, they have 420 volunteers checking in on neighbors. With about 80,000 people in this one area, that's many people running out of food. So these volunteers across the country are collecting donations in cash and trying to prepare baskets with food and cleaning supplies to help those vulnerable families. For numbers, in Almeio, that was 4,800 baskets delivered alone in one day on May 13th. And that's another 4,600 gallons of water, 177 bottles of, they have this like gel alcohol that they use for hand sanitizer. And it was all just in that one area in that one day. So you can see that's this big issue. And then even more so, you have the indigenous groups. So in the Mato Grosso state in Brazil, that's where a lot of their agribusiness is. That's their like section for that. The local NGOs are trying to produce a map that monitors the virus's spread in that area because the indigenous people often travel to the nearest town to buy food or other supplies. But even though they're trying to help themselves not be food insecure, it's increasing that risk of infection because they're going out and people don't know who's been in contact with who and everything of that sort. So it becomes this issue even more so of trying to get help and trying to stay safe.
Right. It feels like, you know, in Latin American countries where wealth inequality is huge, problems like food insecurity might be pervasive. And this kind of crisis, like the one that we're facing right now, probably will make things much worse. And Brazil being the epicenter of the pandemic might have to struggle with the situation for quite some time.
Absolutely. They're saying that crowdfunding might become the reality for them.
Hopefully they can solve the problem soon. Last country we're going to take a look at today is the UK, right? Also, this country has raised a lot of attention internationally because of its strategy against COVID-19 in the beginning. Boris Johnson's government decided that instead of a lockdown, they were going to try to implement what they call the group immunity, trying to reach 60% of slowly, you know, getting everybody to become immune to the disease and therefore trying to at the same time cope with the possible economic downturn of the pandemic. Since the beginning of the pandemic, more over 35,000 people have died and 248,000 people have been infected. Could you please tell us what the situation was before the pandemic?
So last year, the UK government actually introduced an official measure to see how many people in low-income families across the UK were skipping meals or going hungry because they couldn't afford food. And the recent estimate in 2016, before that official measure, suggested that more than 8 million people lived in households that struggled for food in the UK. And that's about 10% of adults being marginally food insecure and about 10% facing moderate or severe insecurities.
Right. And what's the current situation?
Now, food insecurity has become even more common. So the pandemic has exacerbated that problem. Food Foundation in the UK has estimated that now instead of that 8 million people that we were talking about in 2016, so obviously that number had grown since, in 2020, 8.1 million people experienced food insecurity just within the first 3 weeks of lockdown. So you're seeing that this insufficient income is becoming more uncertain due to businesses closing and staff having to be laid off or furloughed. So unemployment and the delayed social benefits, like we talked about in a few other countries, are creating this surge of need from food banks or the surge in food insecurity in general. There are a few current interventions, though, that the government has created. Actually, just this week, they created this one program called Pick for Britain, which is trying to ensure that crops will still be harvested. They're trying to make sure that food is still available and that there is still food for all these people who are in lockdown and who don't have access to money or even to food. So Pick for Britain, they are looking for 80,000 temporary workers to pick fruit and vegetables in the UK. And this is because with the coronavirus, many of the workers who would typically come to the UK to harvest this food are unable to do so because they're migrant workers. So with the pandemic, they're not able to come over to do the work that they normally would. So in addition to providing food for the nation with this Pick for Britain campaign, those who are picking are going to also receive at least national minimum wage. So it's going to not only help everybody by getting food, but also help people directly by giving them some money to pay for food also.
I heard that this situation is actually happening in some other countries like Spain or France, where normally it's, you know, immigrants have come to the country to be able to harvest, you know, the crops and pick up the food. And therefore, by not being able to actually go and do this job, many of the fruits and vegetables that are normally picked up are going to waste. And they're trying to implement programs where they get national people to be able to actually do the job and therefore also secure the food supplies.
Exactly, because food supplies became very inconsistent due to this lack of people who were actually picking the fruits, the vegetables, and doing other harvesting products.
Right. So today we've taken a look at food insecurity and what it actually is, what its root causes are, and the way it has been affected during the time of the pandemic and a few of the countries that have been hit the hardest. We've taken a look at some of the structural causes that have led to the situation, And we've also taken a look at some of the initiatives that are being implemented in these countries. Thank you very much, Monica.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure.